So what are we going to talk about today? There we go. So what we want to talk about today is what exactly are what we refer to as these modern services. There is quite a lot of them. And then we want to pretty much just jump into demos and show you what we've been working on so that we can improve the collection and connection to those services. So first of all, well, what exactly are modern services? Now, many of you are probably using things like SQL Server or some kind of caching technologies. You know, those are services. So in many ways, we're not talking about a fundamental change. It's really an evolution of those technical services that you may be using, which you guys probably have a lot of choice in. But what's happening is the levels of expectations for what people can deliver, for instance, like a CRM system and something I might install of like QuickBooks or something of the years past, has greatly improved and greatly expectations are higher. And you have companies like Salesforce that just come in and just blow away all the expectations of what you think you might be possible. They just, and you, now you want to be able to connect to that. So there's an evolution of the business services as well from, you know, customer to resource to other management of materials, and that's what we want to be able to support.
Yeah, what we're seeing at Salesforce is, you know, a lot of these services on here are kind of business oriented, and it used to be the most active services on the web were kind of consumer focused. Using Salesforce through our APIs is really important to us. How important? We do 75 billion transactions a month overall on the Salesforce platform. 55% of those are through our APIs, through services, through integrations.
Wow.
And for a historically too long period of time, there hasn't been some really great tooling in the first-class IDEs to make that simple. And so this is an important thing for businesses to be able to bring this in and make it simple for developers to use.
And one of the challenges, you know, if you remember years ago, because we've actually been around for a while in this tooling space, there was this, you know, XML web service idea. And if everybody would just build their services the same, we would have this common tooling paradigm, and you'd be able to connect to them, and it was really easy, yeah, right? But unfortunately, things don't stay still. Things are continually evolving. And the idea that we could continually keep up with that is just an unrealistic expectation. I was joking about chasing rabbits or chickens. I'm not sure what you're supposed to chase, but whatever it is that complicated. So when we were challenged to come up with a better tooling experience, one of the things we realized is it's just not worth trying to get everybody to abide by a single standard, because whenever a standard is complete, it is now legacy. So we thought about all these different technologies that are out there. And Salesforce is, you know, as new as a relatively new as a company in the service businesses, even they've got a quick evolution. I mean, you have got what kind of services you guys support now?
What kind of services?
Well, I mean, the technologies, right?
Well, so, you know, Salesforce as a platform has, you know, web presentation services. We've got business logic services. We've got consumer-facing website services with Heroku.
Right. But the technologies.
And so the technologies behind them, from a developer standpoint, you know, we have, you're going to see, actually, you won't see something kind of funny. So we used to be on SOAP, and we cut this part out of our demo. And what I would do is show you our WSDL generation page. And there's probably a dozen different WSDLs in there. And that doesn't even represent all the SOAP endpoints that we have, or sorry, REST endpoints that we have. Things like metadata APIs to discover what you've built on the platform. We've got streaming APIs so that you can do real-time integrations with the data. We've got streaming APIs, metadata APIs. We've got bulk data APIs so you can transfer millions of rows of data in and out of the platform. It goes on, and
not
ever
all of
increasing.
These are going to be the same technology. They can't. I mean, it's
no,
just...
they can't because today SOAP doesn't work because we're talking mobile and we're talking about like much smaller interactions. SOAP's great for bulk, but today REST has become more important. So,
but even REST, there's variations, and then there's authentication variations that go in there. And yes, there's this OAuth standard, but you know, for two people that have been working in this and trying to implement it, there are so many variations that it just becomes, you know, very difficult. So when you are consuming one of these modern services, it is a multi-step process. First of all, just to consume the service, if I want to consume Salesforce, somebody doesn't just send me the URL and a username and password. I have to go to Salesforce and say, I would like to consume a service. I need to configure the service to be able to do that.
Salesforce has to trust any service. This is why you go create an app on Facebook. You do the same thing on Salesforce. Yeah. You get a consumer key, all that kind of stuff.
So there's that first step, right? There is the next step of once I consume it, well, what is the URL? Right? We had the OneNotes and the emails and the post-it notes of all the URLs that maybe you had to go remember what they are. But we've inverted the concept now. Instead of having to know a URL, what if I just use my identity to discover it? After you've consumed it, if you remember with ad service reference and the single file generator technologies that we had, well, what was the code? What is the code that I need? All right, and Dave will kind of go through that a little bit as well. And how much of that should I have to consume? And then after I've consumed it all, well, then what? Right? You've gotten this ad service reference, you've done all these experiences, you've got all this code in your project, and now I go to the World Wide Web to go find 18 different ways of people's opinion around how to use it. So these were some of the problems that we wanted to undertake. So we went out and we talked to some of our customers around who's using this. It's kind of what I was asking earlier. And we have a customer, Landesk, who's been a great customer that has been willing to share their code of what they've gone through and the pains that they've gone through. And they've got a pretty cool scenario. So Landesk is basically a systems management company. They do device management. They've got lots of different software solutions as well. And they are a software company. Turns out they have some bugs like the rest of us. And they needed a way to triage those bugs. So it turns out they also use Salesforce. So they've got their bugs in TFS, and they can go and, like you, be triage team and do Scrum and all the, you know, the new modern ways of managing bugs. But at the end of the day, it's a wall of bugs. And somebody has to decide what's the prior one and prior two, and becomes the argument of the one I really like to work on or whatever. And it turns out that's not exactly the most productive way to actually serve your customers. So they happen to use Salesforce. And turns out they have some pretty important data in Salesforce that actually works for them.
Yeah, so what Landesk is doing is they're using our customer support offering, which has a case object. So a case is like a customer support instance. And they're tying the TFS bugs to Salesforce cases. Cases are naturally connected to contacts and accounts. And so now they have more information about that bug right at their fingertips through Salesforce.
So they will know how many customers are affected by a particular bug. The big customers that are spending lots of money with them, maybe it's a deal that's pending, they will know what bugs are affected by them so they can utilize all of that information. So now they can prioritize that.
And this is crazy, right?
So they were trying to figure out how do they visualize that. So this is, I'll give credit to him at the end, but Tanner from Landesk, they were basically used this population growth formula. And what they were trying to do is not just have this linear scale, but try to make sure the important bugs got to the top, but didn't bury the medium bugs. So it turns out to be an interesting formula that they implemented. The sample will be out on my GitHub repo. So be able to get access to this as well. But it's pretty cool about what they're doing is they're using the two data sources and creating what they call an OOMP score, or a unified metric priority. And we'll see this come in place. So now that they can do this calculation, now they can get a visualization. You can see that curve going on there, looking at their bugs, and they can drill into the bugs to see what customers are affected by the cases. And now the triage team is off having a good old time, having their own party, maybe having some beers because they're actually celebrating.
They're happy, right? The developers are happy.
And happy developers?
Happy developers make happy customers.
So that's the case that we will walk through here. So with that, we will switch over to our demos. This one here. And let's see. So here we have the Landesk UI. It's a mock-up of what they use. It is just the UI. If we click on anything, it will not have much functionality because that, quite honestly, is our demo, is to put the services behind this functionality.
Yeah, so this is basically kind of the outline or the user interface that we might have gotten from our UX team or our
designers. You don't want our UX, trust us.
And so it's our job then to plumb this thing up, to put the plumbing in it to make it all work.
So let's start with adding Salesforce.
Okay,
that is where our customers are.
Jump right into it. So here we are inside of Visual Studio, and as a .NET developer or somebody who's unfamiliar with Salesforce, the challenge, the first hurdle, is where do I start? How do I do this? What's available to me? And so we know that within Visual Studio, we've got a couple options around add service reference and so on. Salesforce does have a WSDL definition, so may not be your first choice, but like if it's the only thing available, maybe you go there. And so let me just show you what that's like. So I'm going to go ahead and add service reference. Now, one thing to understand about the Salesforce platform is that everything, including your WSDL, which is actually valuable data because it describes the data that you're storing, is behind a login. And so it turns out that the service reference actually doesn't work very well with WSDL to begin with.
Well, with OAuth, that's really the problem.
It loses the port. And so it turns out, I happen to know that the next thing you want to do is go to advanced, because service isn't going to work for me. And so I'll go to advanced and go add a web reference. Now, notice that we're already like three dialogues in at this point. And again, it's asking
like
me for a URL.
Going through a wormhole of time is kind of what you're doing here.
Yeah, maybe it's a spiral of death. But and so I could enter a URL here, but then I'd be required to authenticate, log into Salesforce, and there's no mechanism for that in here. Luckily, I found out that you can actually download the WSDL as a file, put it on your file system, and then go ahead and import it that way.
So this is one of the first examples of, even if we support the technology for, in this case, SOAP and WSDL, the authentication evolved. And we thought about evolving this dialogue and continuing to figure out all the OAuth patterns, but we just couldn't, it wasn't going to be maintainable. So this was one of the challenges.
Okay, so it was able to parse my WSDL and is now generating a nice proxy class for me. I'm going to go ahead and show hidden files. And what I want to do is I want to show you the result of this. I think you're probably already kind of getting the gist just by my scrolling there. But if I open this reference.cs, this is my client. This is what I'm supposed to use to get those cases and contacts for Landesk. There's a couple of interesting things about it. One, it doesn't allow you to step through with the debugger. So if you do have some kind of weird connectivity problems, you have to know that this is there and then remove it. Another issue with this is you see this little slider, thumb slider thing?
It looks kind of small.
Barely grab it. That's because there are 118,000 lines of code in this WSDL to get to contacts and cases, which I think is just like as a proud developer, you don't need all that useless code.
Wait. Who gets paid for the amount of code that they write? No? This was a feature. We were trying to get you more money.
Okay. You know, one final negative of this also is this is a generated file. So if I did go in and make some changes, the next time that I had to refresh the WSDL from the service, my changes would be lost.
But we told you at the top, don't touch this.
Yeah, it says at the very top, don't touch this. And there's a good reason for that. So we're not going to go that way. We'll just delete that and then clean up this web references folder. So there's another way to do this. As I'm sure you know, being developers, we could certainly create an HTTP request. We could figure out the OAuth dance.
It's REST. It's easy.
It's REST, right? It's simple REST endpoints. And then go find the documentation and see what the resulting shape of the data looks like, the graph, if you will. Or I could go and see if I can find something on NuGet. Where's my, I'm clicking in the wrong place. So I could go out to NuGet and do a search for Salesforce. That seems reasonable.
NuGet is the new hotness, right? Everybody's got a NuGet.
NuGet's the new NPM, or the old NPM.
I don't know.
One of those. So anyways, so that returns some results, but there's a problem with this. If I'm not familiar, and I don't want to teach you guys to be Salesforce developer experts, I just want to help you get your job done. You don't know which one of these is appropriate, right? This one right here that I'm pointing at, that's actually only for Universal Apps. This one here says something about soap helpers. I'm not sure it's exactly right, but then if I scroll down, then I really start to get lost, right? I'm not sure what to use. So we're not going to do that either.
So it's nice that NuGet has all these packages, but there's no context. Like, we've got a project open here. There's no filtering to be able to support, you know, to give you context of that.
Right. So instead, we're going to go to Add Connected Service.
It was right there in the middle between the two.
And it turns out that it's sandwiched in between those two other options that we didn't want. And so the connected service brings up this dialogue of various services that you can connect to. Why don't you explain a little bit more about this?
So this is what we've re-envisioned on how we want to connect to services. Rather than expect the world to come to us, it's a new world, we've kind of taken this true, and now what we want to do is provide a curated list of services. Instead of having to have a one-size-fits-all, we want to be able to allow the uniqueness of each service, and including the ability to build on this over time. So what you see in the bottom left is find more services. You can go out to the gallery and get more, and we'll walk through some of that in a moment. And in fact, we have our friends at Datalogix that are building a PDF service as well. So we wanted to provide an extensibility model that would be catered to those services, and then you can consume those in that fashion like we'll see with Salesforce here. So why don't we just
jump
into Salesforce?
Yeah, one thing I wanted to point out about, you know, whether it's appropriate for what you're doing is you can see that the connected service has this download cloud and it says project support. This project is currently supported, where this one isn't. Obviously, that one's for mobile, and we're an MVC web app. So let's go ahead and...
So we have that extra context that we're trying to provide here.
So let's walk through this. Now, the process for connecting to the service is, first of all, we've got to figure out or establish a design time credential authentication, because what's going to happen is, as we go through this, we're going to want to query the Salesforce platform for information at design time. And so that means that basically what we're going to do is we're going to turn Visual Studio into an API client for Salesforce using these credentials.
And you know, if you look at this, this is not a generic dialogue, right? It very much is Salesforce. It's got the Salesforce logo. It's got a Salesforce layout. It happens to be a wizard flow.
That's actually a very good point. As soon as I selected to configure that, the code transferred over to Salesforce developed code. Now, this was developed in conjunction with Salesforce. We partnered on this. Big shout out to the guys in Fargo. But this is code we're responsible for that's plugging in to the connected services framework. And so I'm going to select a user account and an environment. I'm using a custom domain name, which we'll understand the reason for later on in the talk. Once I've put that information in, now we want to know, well, what kind of application are you building? We might assume that it's web server flow, but it doesn't have to work that way. And the two that we support right now for OAuth is web server and username and password flow. OAuth 2 has 4 or 5 different types of flow depending on where your code's running. So you wouldn't use either of these if you were on a device, for instance. The reason is there's no callback URL on a device, and so there's other mechanisms for that. So we're going to go with web server flow. And then, again, very custom to Salesforce is the question about a branded sign-in page. So our customers really do a lot of customizations, and sometimes they like to completely wipe Salesforce, the word, off of everything that they've implemented, which is fine with us. And one way they want to do that is in the URL, so they can create a custom domain. Right. And then if they have a C name, they can do some mapping there, and it just disappears completely. So we're going to go ahead and do one of these.
Yeah, go for it. So just another point is, you know, what you're seeing there is we're remembering previous selections. We've got MRUs in there. And this is a principle that we like for people building connected services, because we want you as developers to not have to remember and copy and paste in all the times. We really want you to be able to select from, for instance, the list of objects that are available in
your
Salesforce.
Yeah, so finally, I've configured my design time. I've configured my runtime authentication. And now, what objects do I want to have available to me in my project? And
you want them all, don't you?
You can see that, no, we don't want them all. That was WSDL.
But you might we put them there just in case you wanted them.
No. We don't have to worry about that. So I want the contact and I want the case, so I can select those and then click Finish. Now, what's interesting is this is still acting as an API client for Salesforce in that it's creating that configuration piece. So instead of going into Salesforce and saying, hey, I want to create a new OAuth app and get my client ID in secret, we're able to do that through the API at this point. And so it creates a new connected app, which is the OAuth configuration.
Yeah. So you never know what you're going to get in a demo.
Creates that and then leverages that. The next thing it does is scaffold up a bunch of stuff in there, and we'll point out some more of that. So this is part of being a connected service provider. Sorry, I don't even like that word. Microsoft has some suggestions about the flow. And one of the philosophies, of course, is, OK, I've added your service. What did you do to my project? Priority one. But what do I do next? Priority two. And so here's the things that have happened to this particular project. We've added in web config the name of the connected app or the OAuth stuff that we created on the Salesforce side so that you can reference that if you ever need to. And then we added some NuGet package references.
So we're still using NuGet.
But we're following the instructions of the service, the connected service.
Right. It's like this prescriptive guidance to get you started.
Some .NET references so that we can speak to an external service, and then the connection class. The other thing that we did was we took all that OAuth information and we stuck that into web config for you. So that's all ready to go. One of the great things that I like about this is we created this thing. Let me see if I can scroll in here. Is that zooming? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is this part here that says Salesforce OAuth Redirect Handler. So this thing is awesome because what that does now is it means that we've already given you all that OAuth stuff so that you don't have to worry about any of it. You just exercise the references and the toolkits that we put in there, and the whole dance is taken care of for you. Saving of tokens, obtaining refresh tokens, handling the scope, all of that stuff is there for you. So that's kind of cool. Right, so let's go back to
our
app.
Let's give it a shot.
Right. Oh, yeah. So getting started, that's the next thing that we... So once you've done this, especially if it's the first time, it's like, well, okay, I'm in my MVC app. How do I use this? And so we've got two walkthroughs, one for an MVC app and one for a console app. And I'm just going to start building this. And I'm going to do it by selecting all the code in here and creating a controller.
So this was one of the other principles that we have, is we didn't want to pollute your project with sample code. After you've used this for the fourth or fifth time, we didn't want the first thing you do was delete class one. We wanted it to be productive over time.
Yeah, and so instead of putting sample code in the project, we put it on a web page. So next time you do this, you probably don't want that. So here's the empty controller that I'm going to create. I'm going to call it contacts. And then go ahead and add it.
So this is standard MVC stuff, right?
Standard MVC stuff. I'm going to just delete that because I'm going to use what I copied from the getting started. And then you'll notice a whole bunch of red here. Well, that's because I'm copying and pasting. This isn't part of the scaffolding. Otherwise, we'd know the context a little bit better. The point here is that my namespace is different. So my namespace should be the Landesk UMP. So I'm going to see if I have a fancy, automatic. That's awesome.
We like automation.
Keystrokes. Right, so I'll save that, and now I've got a working controller. Now within this controller are all the methods for getting a list of contacts, creating contacts, updating contacts, and deleting contacts. So it's all represented in that piece of sample code, and it really doesn't change no matter what kind of object that you're dealing with.
So it's the basic CRUD capabilities.
It's really representative.
Yeah. And it's mapped into the MVC actions, so that's pretty cool.
So for instance, you know, there's the index, which will return a list of stuff. Okay. So the next thing I'm going to do is start creating the user interface for the contacts. And I'm going to do that, and this is one of my favorite parts of Visual Studio, is its contextuality. I don't know if that's a word. I've made them up before.
We can make up technologies. Why can't we make up words?
But just, you know, the way that it handles the right-click list to modify it for where you are and what you're doing is really cool, I think. But anyways, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a list, use the list template. And then for the model class, I'm going to use the contact model that was scaffolded for me. So it's hard to see on the screen, but there's a case there, and then there's a contact there. And those were part of the connected service wizard that we went through. So I'll select contact and add that guy. So there's my view. One thing I do want to do a little bit differently is you'll notice that I've got every single pick and field that's on that contact in here. I don't want that. I really only want like a half a dozen. And so what I'm going to do is cheat and come over here and steal some views that are pre-created. There's nothing magic about these. As a matter of fact, they're exactly the same as the ones in the walkthrough.
So we just trimmed down the fields just to make the demo look a little nicer.
So I'll grab this and drop it into my contacts views folder. I'm going to replace and update my window. And so there's the half dozen fields. Otherwise, it's the same. So at this point,
I think we're good to go.
I think I'm ready to go. So we'll do a control F5. Keep our fingers crossed. Actually, I'm pretty confident this is going to work.
Throw stuff at him, please.
You never say that.
Please.
Okay, Salesforce contacts, and boom, I'm instantly asked to authenticate using OAuth.
So this is that OAuth dance, and we've scaffolded the code into your project. There's libraries that we use, but there's also scaffolding because while we have some default code that we put in there, we know depending on your scenario, you might need to tweak it a little bit.
Okay, and so as part of OAuth, we're presented with, hey, we think you're this person. Here's the access that you're granting this application to on your service side. Do you want to let that happen or not? And so we'll say allow. And sure enough, we have our list of contacts. Now, that didn't require a really deep knowledge of exercising the Salesforce REST APIs, and that's what I think the real power of connected services comes in. So let's go ahead and take a look at
There's a lot in that. We created the connected app. We consumed it. I mean, right there, that was far too long for me to figure out the first time.
No, the connected service did that all for us.
Yeah, that is cool.
Okay, so if I click into details, I can see the details of this, so my details view is working. I can go ahead and try to edit this guy. Shouldn't be a problem. But one thing I want to point out, which is kind of cool, is I'm going to make Jack's first name ridiculously long. And then when I tab out of this,
Jack's mom wasn't too happy. She just kind of making
Jack, fun. Jack. So when I tab out of this, I've got a field validation error. It's telling me that the maximum amount for this field is 40 characters.
Now, was that a save? Did that happen?
Did you see me code up any validation rules?
Well,
any
it is modern web. You could do anything on a click event.
Okay. Well, so what about an email, for instance? That's not a valid email. And again, I've got a validation rule that says, well, that doesn't look like an email. I'm not going to let you try to save that.
So how'd you do that?
Okay. Well, so I mentioned that the Visual Studio is in itself a client of our API. And one of our APIs is called Describe. And Describe says is a request to get all the information about that particular object. And I should just pause for a second. When I talk about objects, you can think of them as tables traditionally. We don't call them tables. It's a Salesforce idiosyncrasy. But at any rate, you can see that this first object or first field here, ID, it's been annotated with key, a display name, and also that it's not creatable and not updatable because IDs are immutable on our platform.
As all IDs should be.
And all this information came from that describe. Now, we happen to be able to do that, but other services will have other kind of special sauce that they can put on top.
So this was another example. When we were doing tooling around services, we were working with Dynamics CRM, and we were trying to get their metadata. I was working with SAP. We were trying to figure out how to get their metadata. SAP was using OData. They're part of the OData board. They're using custom annotations before OData 4 was out. And what we realized is every service has this information, but they have it in unique places. And the idea to get everybody to put it in the same place was unattainable, so we decided to, if it's a custom connected
like,
service.
It's almost like taking a step back and going, okay, you guys start here rather than start here.
Yeah.
And that so, way the service, the connected service can
it's
define
unique.
All that
it's,
and they're responsible
yeah.
for it.
So not only in the can Salesforce control the UI, they can control where they go get their metadata. SAP can get their metadata. Dynamics CRM can get their metadata. So here, we've generated the attributes just to be able, based on that metadata, and we have a really nice POCO class.
Yep. So yeah, and the interesting thing is the reason why we're able to get that describe data is the Salesforce types are not just primitives like you would see in a standard database. They're types like phone, email address, URL, and so on, which allows you to have this kind of rich representment of the data outside of the Salesforce UI.
Cool. So we got Salesforce data.
Yeah, we got Salesforce data. So what's the next step?
So let's go get some bugs from Visual Studio Online when we do that.
All right.
So the next service we want to get from TFS. So I'm going to go over and say add connected service. Now, turns out we actually don't have one for VS Online yet. They're working on improving with their REST APIs, but I was working with the team and I was able to go and create a sample for this.
What? You code? I thought you said you were a program manager.
Well, a program manager and a developer tool, so we do like to know what our customers do. So I did write this sample. Again, it'll be on my repo. You can get it by just going out to the gallery, and you can see the VS Online one I built. There's the PDF service that Datalogix is building. So what we'll do is we will add that one. And again, I'm using a wizard here again, but notice the wizard is slightly different. It's not just branding. The pages are different. I'm using the handy-dandy TFS selector. So
That's a user control, isn't it? You didn't even have to write that.
I didn't have to write this part of the control. I was able to re-leverage it because it comes with the TFS client. So now I've got my VS Online project. I can go in. Again, I'm choosing one-time auth options. In this case, it's unique to VS Online. I can name the thing that gets added to my project because I might actually consume it multiple times. And now when I finish, we'll do the same NuGet thing. We'll give you a same getting started, what happened, what did I do to your project, and then some samples for some next steps. So the next steps are to create a controller. I will come over here and create a controller for work items. So work items or work item? Work item. We'll see.
Singular.
That might be my first break. All right. And we will do the fix up. And I'll remove my little warning about that. So now what you're seeing here is I've got a standard MVC controller, but if we notice, I've got a select statement here, and this is OData select, because that's what the VS Online team is doing. And with Salesforce, you use Sokal.
We use Sokal. So,
potato or potato, which one are you?
Since we have APIs for creating and inserting data, we created a SQL-like language called Sokal. It's very much like SQL. There's only a select, but you know that's what we call it, Sokal.
So now we'll add our view, and we'll make it a list view again. And it's on our work item type, because we scaffolded that in as well. And you hear me using the word scaffolding as opposed to generating. We'll see that more in a second here. All right, so at this point, we'll run this again. So now we should be building up our services, our service consumption. In fact, we're also building up our list of pages. So let's clear a little room here. So we've got our Salesforce contacts. Now we're going to get some work items. And I didn't take the time that you did to clean up the list, but you get the idea. So now I've got data from Salesforce. I got data from VS Online. Now we want to mash it up.
Right? Yep. And actually, it's kind of funny. I think we were talking about mashups when Ajax first came out, I don't know, many years ago. And now we're talking about like serious business use case mashups, line of business mashups.
A big mashed potato. All right. So what I've got here is I've just to speed things up a little bit, we're going to drag in some files and we'll walk through these a little bit. Whoops, not the whole thing, just the one. So we'll drag in a controller. Where is my controllers folder, if I can learn my alphabet? And in here, what we see is they've got this OOMP calculator, which is what they're using. So we need to bring that in. So let me go grab that. And in our business folder, what we'll see is that it's going to return a UMP score result. So that's just another model. And what's nice about this is we're grabbing this REST data. We're using these services to generate these models so that once I get the services to populate models, I get to take advantage of all the .NET technologies. So I can use link, I can move these objects around, I can select and join, and this is the shape of the object that I want to actually return. Okay, so let's actually, what I'm going to do is close this up and we're going to build. And we're going to get a list of errors. And the first one is a VS Online ID is missing, but I'm pretty sure Salesforce, we've got that custom field in on
no,
case object.
So we created a custom field on the case object specifically to hold the VS Online ID, and there it is. So
we have
we
it.
We did that right.
But notice the field or the property name is underscore underscore C.
Okay, so underscore underscore C is an idiosyncrasy of Salesforce. It represents something that's custom in your schema, so it could be a custom object or a custom field. We put underscore underscore C in there to prevent collisions with any kind of Salesforce objects or fields that might be created later.
So a really good way to abstract it. But remember I mentioned scaffolding, not generating. Instead of having to do some magic, which we invented all kinds of great technologies in the languages to deal with generated code and how to extend it, partial classes and all kinds of stuff, I was just able to edit the code. Because we scaffolded, it's yours to own. So there's no magic. It's code that we primed your project with. It's yours. I just added a JSON property attribute, and now I can clean up. So in my code, I can actually use a property name that I want to use without having to create yet another model object to copy it into.
And really, the only way that you'll lose that edit is if you delete that file.
There's no warning at the top. This says, can't touch this. That's right. Okay, so work item does not have a definition for case. Okay, so where does work item come from?
VS Online.
Yeah, so a case comes from Salesforce. So here's another place where what I'm going to do is, instead of having yet other objects, I'm just going to put the case property on the work item object. And again, I'm changing the scaffolded code, because it's my code.
And this is really cool, because you're actually changing or enhancing the schema, where these things are not naturally related.
Right.
You're creating a relationship between them,
and,
which is very cool.
And I don't have to do like 8,000 lines of code and classes to do it. So now it's asking for a count. You were supposed to add a count.
You didn't tell me that. I can fix that easily, though.
Okay. You want to do it?
Yeah, I'm going to do it.
All right. You broke it. You fix it.
It's the Salesforce side. So, what I don't want to do is go through the whole connected services process again, because it does a lot more than I really want. But what I want to do instead is update the Salesforce data service.
And this was another key attribute that we wanted to build. We didn't want this to be demo fodder for PMs to stand up here and go, look at this great feature. We wanted you to be able to build on it over time, and that iterative fashion. So here's an example of we've implemented update on the Salesforce connected service.
And it actually runs through the same wizard, but you can see there's things that I can't change. What I can change is when I get to the list of objects that I want to include. And you can see that Visual Studio magically knows that I've got a case and a contact already in here. It's magic, isn't it?
Well, and that's the thing is, again, tooling, we used to store special things in files, which I won't tell you what we actually call them, to remember this. But in this case, we wanted to look at your code. So we just use features like Roslyn to go look in your project. And if you have a type that matches the thing we're looking at Salesforce, we go, oh, that's it. So we're going to work over your code.
So if you deleted the case, it would show up and you could re-add it, in other words.
Or if you hand-added it yourself, it would show up.
Or if you hand-added it. And then finally what happened there was all it did was scaffold that object for me because we already had the service reference, we already had the OAuth handler and the connected app.
So now I'm going to add the account object to case. And so now I have a app that's I've glued all together. I was able to consume the service, and I was able to scaffold the code, and I was able to enhance that code as relevant to me for this particular project. So now I've got Salesforce contacts, and we'll log in here. So we'll go get the contacts. And for VSO work items, now we'll get the work items. And now we can make mashed potatoes. So now what I'm seeing is the bugs from VSO, the OOMP score is calculated in this business class that goes and takes a look at the cases and figures out all these cool calculations and gives us this score. So cool? Good so far? All right. Now, you're a command line guy. Is that helpful, the way it looks?
Just because I'm a command line guy doesn't mean I don't like pretty pictures.
All right. So let's go fix that. We have one more thing I want to do is I'm going to add a little API controller in here. And all this does is calls that same OOMP calculation, but it does it from an API, a web API controller. Because in this case, what I want to do is I want to take advantage of Kendo's controls, or Landesk took advantage of Kendo's controls, to be fair. And now I can get an OOMP graph. And what it will do is, from the client, make a call to that same service. And now I'm getting a better visualization of my data. And if I'm looking here, where's our, we have that special outpost six, okay. So if I look at this bug, and I can look at the bug in VS Online, and I've got to log in, and so here's an example of where we're taking advantage of authentication, and it's cool. In fact, it's somewhat cool, but you'll notice I actually have to, it's a web, so it's not click once, if anybody knows what that means. But anyway, right. So now I can see my bug in VS Online. And I can also, we can also look at the case in Salesforce. And I'll log into Salesforce.
So what's wrong with this right now?
Wait, let's enjoy the goodness part first. Hold on. I got bugs in VS Online. I got work cases in Salesforce. I can see them all. Apparently, somebody's trying to open a data center in Mars. I mean, you know, you talk about advancements.
Chance in hell. So what is wrong with this application at this point? Come on, evaluate. There's a lot of logins. That's no good.
Now,
that's not sticky.
Let's get out of this for a second. And we'll close that one. I'll close this one. And now I'm going to log this in again. And you'll notice that, I'm jumping ahead. Do that first. So the first part is what you may not have noticed is the app itself is not actually secured. I actually was able to get to it. It wasn't until we started querying bugs and work cases from Salesforce that we got challenged for login. Now, for those of you that are implementing auth on your apps, how are you guys doing it? Are you doing it with SQL Server as your authentication scheme, having yet another copy of users somewhere, and because that is the easy way of doing it, unfortunately.
I see some grins out there.
Yeah, nobody's going to admit to it, but we know. We know. So it turns out, so who's actually tried to use Azure AD to authenticate their apps? Anybody's been successful with it? So maybe. It is difficult. You need like Vittorio by your side. And he was by our side. And we've worked through improving that experience. So now I don't want yet another SQL database of users. Landesk has AD. That's where their employees are logging in. We want to take advantage of that. So I'm going to log in here. And the configure Azure AD connected service lets me configure my project. It's not just consuming data services. In this case, we're going to consume authentication services. So we'll go off and we will finish configuring this. And what this one's going to do is go out to Azure AD, very similar to what we did in Salesforce. We had to create a connected app. It's going to create an Azure AD app. And that's the thing that manages the permissions for all the resources. Does this web app have permission to access Azure AD? Can I use my Azure AD identities to authenticate users? And what we've also done, and this is the one thing we did behind the scenes, is we set up single sign-on between Azure AD and Salesforce.
Now, I just want to say one thing. I know you guys were watching the screen as he was talking, and you saw a lot of stuff going on in there, right? That represents kind of a knowledge base that you get to tap into and completely leverage, right? And so that's one of my favorite ones, just because there's so much being configured for you in the back end.
We have this kind of feeling that if you understand authentication, then we've done it wrong. Because it's not secure.
Right, that's a breach.
So, all right, so we have the same pattern here. We have what happened to your project, next steps, getting started. We follow principles again. But now, if we run this again, and I'm just going to do one little thing here. So we're going to run this again, and now what the Configure Azure AD did was it not only consumed the NuGets and scaffold stuff in my project, and went and added to, and using Roslyn, right, because it's your code, we went and found all your controllers and we added the authorize attribute to it. So now everything in the app is now secure. And of course, it was scaffolding, so you can go change it if you have parts of the site that you want to make publicly visible. But now everything's been secured under Azure AD. And now when I go off to Salesforce contacts, I can still log in to Salesforce. But notice I get this Azure AD button. Yeah, I can. We get this forgot your password, or I can use Azure AD. Now, because I'm logged in to Azure AD, it will do a little bit of that dance if we watch the URLs where it's going to go, OK, you're logged in. Let me go check with Salesforce. Oh, damn it.
It's probably because you were zoomed in.
I told you, don't be dissing my demos with
jinxing.
Jinxing, dissing, jinxing, whatever. Come on, do the dance. Yes, okay. I told you, we don't support click once in the web. That was another technology, so it's click twice. All right, so I was able to do that dance with single sign-on, and it went off to Azure AD, found it, and now I'm back in. Now, there's one thing there, though. I don't really want to be asked about the single sign, the other thing. If I got single sign-on,
all right.
Can you fix that?
Let me solve that for you.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of weird to throw up a login page and then leave a button at the bottom for single sign-on. It's not really that weird, but it might be redundant in some cases. And so what we're going to do is we're going to configure Salesforce to remove that. So I'll just log into Salesforce. That's probably Microsoft Online.
It's that button.
There it is. OK, I'm going to select this guy.
The right one? Yeah.
Okay, and now we're gonna go into the setup area. The setup area is where all the configuration inside of Salesforce platform takes place. You can see it's pretty pretty complicated, kind of old-fashioned, but it works. I'm going to configure that my domain thing we talked about earlier that had to do with branding and my custom domain. And I've got a setting down here at the bottom for my authentication service that we've set up. And simply unclicking that login page checkbox, saving, will now prevent that login page from showing up. So why don't I just log out of here? And then Steve, since the land desk
is... Oh, you give me the pleasure of having this blow up again?
Sure, why not?
So
it's not going to blow up. This is modern technology.
All right, so we'll go in here, we'll click for a bug, we'll go and actually, that happened too quick. Hold on, we're going to...
No, it didn't.
Did it do the dance that quick?
I was happy with that speed.
All right, so you can kind of see, almost have to slow down time, and you could see on the top, it did the redirects and did the single sign-on for
me. Yeah, because in this case, we're saying for this particular app, we don't necessarily want to throw up the login page. Yeah. So
that's pretty cool. I mean, think about all the services we just consumed here, the productivity on how you were able to consume all of that, and the customizations we did with Salesforce. So let me jump out here.
That's a pretty cool demo, though, don't you think? There's a lot of stuff consumed in there. There's some stuff that we didn't show you with the single sign-on setup, but you know, once you got that set up, you can bang these things out like crazy.
And I'll show you some links at the end. So just real quickly, because it is build, you are developers, you might want to build one of these own connected services. And I just want to do a quick teaser into these. So if you want to author them, well, that's an SDK that we've made available today that you can download and work with the Visual Studio 2015 RC to be able to build your own connected services. Well, who would build one? We think any service that has unique configurations, any service that you want to be able to have developers consume very easily, just like we did with Salesforce. It was rocket science at first, to be fair. I mean, they have a lot of rich features.
We didn't know anything about
Salesforce. We didn't know anything about it. I didn't want to know anything about Salesforce. I just wanted it to work. And we learned. It was very cool. The more we learned, the more we look back, going, wow, that's actually pretty elegant and pretty cool. But the learning curve was pretty steep to get to the first point. We want to have developers have this progressive learning experience, right? First thing is shut off authentication and just get to the good stuff. And then I'll go back and secure it, which we don't get to. Here, because we have features like connected services, you can actually get a secure app up front and then go back and investigate it.
So, and by the way, if you are interested, the Salesforce connected service is open source. So you can look at the code, see how we did certain things, see what you might be able to steal from that. I think we have a pretty generous license on it. So
I was going to say, you want to steal or borrow? Or
borrow, leverage.
And this is one of the things that we worked early on is when we wanted to do this, we wanted to use the Salesforce implementation as a reference implementation. So again, the kudos to our guys in Fargo that have been doing this work. It's very cool to be able to see and very easy to, well, there's a lot of functionality. I don't know if I'd say easy, but it's very clear what it's doing. Anyway, so you can build these. Just wrapping up, we certainly want to have connected services to enable the breadth of services that are out there. We didn't want it to be a one-size-fits-all. We wanted to support configuring the service and the project, which is what modern services require you. We wanted to help guide you with the next steps, give you ownership of the code. We want to retire, I like to joke, retire MC Hammer and the can't touch this style coding. We want to work with your code, and this is what we want to be doing more so in Visual Studio tooling. And in fact, I'd love to talk to you more about the kind of projects that you're doing. And of course, we didn't want this to be unique to Microsoft. We wanted to embrace third parties, and there's no better third party to embrace than Salesforce. So big hug. And for references, here's some references on the connected services information, the SDK, and of course, information on developer Salesforce. And there's some info on us. I do, again, want to give out, in addition to our our development team in Fargo that built this connected service and the connected service extension, but the Salesforce connected service, is Tanner, Lindsay, and Landesk for letting us have their code, literally have their code, understand what they were doing, see the challenges that they were having, and be able to use that to figure out how do we make better tooling. And there's some info there for Tanner, and I got to say, he was when he saw the video, he was like, I wish I had this months ago.
Quick plug, so come downstairs. We're on the first floor. You'll see us as you're going for food. We have these little things called quick starts. And if you finish the quick start, which is basically just kind of walking through the walkthrough that is part of the connected service, you'll get this cool T-shirt that is like Soyuz Apollo docking with Salesforce and Microsoft
that's down pretty below. Cool.
And a saying on the back that's pretty cool. So come on down and try that out.
There's always swag. So okay. With that, we will say thank you, and I appreciate you guys coming, and we'll stick around for some questions.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, get more, consume more services, and of course, there's evaluate.
Oh, evaluate, please.
Yes, please, we do read those, we appreciate them, and thanks.